WMFO, Medford.
Cuckoo, 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 cuckoo.
Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 9th of March, 2022. My name is Arthur. The CD players are not running, so I had to do my own sound effects for the cuckoo clock. Since it's Women's History Month or Women's Month, I'm not certain what, I'm going to have a double feature of a show I think I've only played once on here, starring Boris Karloff. It was a show that aired from 1941 to 1952, titled Inner Sanctum. It's a scary one. I guess it was based on the Simon & Schuster periodicals, provided some stories for it, created by Hyman Brown. But to tie this into the Women's Month, there was the first one. Is Terror by Night. Had an original air date of the 29th of June, 1952, and it starred a fan of Grand Hour fan, Agnes Moorehead. So we'll go ahead and start that up. Thanks for listening.
Friends of the creaking door, this is your host to welcome you into the inner sanctum. Come in, come in. I always feel lighthearted in weather like this, so perhaps we ought to have a little poetry before we begin. An Arab girl named Yuhim was lied to by her husband, Menuhim. For this little trifle, she shot him with a rifle, and now she can see right through him. And now, if your scalpels are sharpened and ready, we will proceed with the business of the evening. Tonight, we're going to do a little study in terror. Have you ever been alone with fear? Alone in the night and frightened? Well, here is our star, Agnes Moorehead, in the role of Linda Dixon, who will tell us a tale of terror. By night.
It was Friday night, and I think I was already a little nervous as I drove north into the mountains. I hadn't wanted to waste even an hour of my 2-week vacation, so I'd had all my bags packed and the car waiting at the curb in front of my office building. Everything would have been all right if the fuel pump in my 6-year-old car hadn't acted up. It took the mechanic almost 2 hours to get me going. So now I was driving through the night with 50 miles more to go, and I was tired and nervous and irritated. And then I heard the whistle in the distance. At first I couldn't place it. And then I remembered the state prison was somewhere in the vicinity. The whistle. It meant a prisoner had escaped. I reached over and turned on the radio. Maybe they were broadcasting something about it.
Motorists are warned to be on the lookout for Lee Hartley, who escaped from the death cell at State Prison at 9:15 p.m. Tall, dark-haired, regular features, no distinguishing marks. Hartley is a confirmed killer. He is believed to be armed. Beware of Hartley. He would rather kill than eat.
He would rather Police kill than eat? And that man was loose, perhaps waiting around the next bend in the road.
Hartley was helped to escape from the outside by his sweetheart, Helen Hearn. A red-headed woman just as vicious as Hartley himself. It is thought that Hartley and the Hearn woman may have separated after the escape. All motorists are warned to beware of a dark-haired man and a red-haired woman alone or together.
My hand was shaking a little as I turned off the radio. I looked in the car mirror and shivered. I, too, have red hair. There was a storm coming on, and I was driving into it, and the night was black, and I felt small and lonely and frightened in the car. And then I saw them in the mirror, the headlights sweeping up behind me. A car. It had come out of nowhere. It was pulling alongside, cutting me off. I cowered behind the wheel and watched the door of that other car open. A man stepped out. Oh, and I breathed a sigh of relief. It was a state trooper.
You driving all alone, miss?
Yes, officer.
Sorry if I scared you. We're stopping all cars. Where are you headed for?
Well, I'm going up to the lodge at Smuggler's Notch. That's near Mount Mansfield. You see, I started out late from the city, and I'm having motor trouble.
Yeah, sure. Can I see your driver's license, please?
My driver's license? Yes, of course. Here, I've got it somewhere in my purse. I seem to be all fingers. It's that escaped prisoner, Hartley.
How'd you know about him?
I heard the prison whistle, and then it came over the radio about Hartley and his red-haired girlfriend.
Hey, you've got red hair, too.
You don't think I'm that woman.
Find that license yet?
Oh, yes, I'm sure it's in here. Not so many things in this bag. Oh, here, I've got it. Here's my license.
Thanks. What time did you say you left the city?
About 5 o'clock.
It took you a long time to get up this far.
Well, I told you I had motor trouble.
So you did. Okay, Miss Dixon, here's your license.
Thank you.
You can go ahead.
Thank you. Oh, darn. There it goes again.
More motor trouble.
Oh, it's the same thing. The mechanic said it might happen again. Oh, it started.
You want to get that fixed first chance you get.
Oh, it's too late. All the service stations are closed.
Well, there's one that's open all night, about 2 miles up the road. Stop there. Bill Slater's place. He's a good mechanic. He'll fix you up. Tell him Joe Nesbitt sent you.
Thanks, I will.
And listen, Miss Dixon.
Yes?
You be careful. Don't stop to give anyone a lift, man or woman.
Oh, don't worry. I won't. In a few minutes, I saw the lights of the station. I swung into the open space in front of the pumps and stopped. There was another car, a coupe, parked at the pump, but there was nobody in it. And I didn't see any attendant around either. I pressed the horn button. No one answered. Everything seemed so quiet and suddenly ominous. I found myself shivering. I had a curious feeling that someone was watching me. I had to get away from there. Fast. Oh, the starter wouldn't work again. Again. Oh, it won't stop. Oh, it won't stop. For a long time, I sat behind the wheel listening for the sound of footsteps stealing up behind the car. But there were none. Then I could bear it no longer. I had to get out of the car. I had to see what was in that office. I opened the door of the car and stepped down on the gravel. Anybody in there? No answer. I clenched my fists and stepped inside. There on the floor at my feet. The body of a man. His mechanic's jumper was stained red. And his throat was cut. How long I stood there, I'll never know. I was petrified. Unable to move, unable to take my eyes from the body. What's that? Someone coming downstairs. Hartley. It must be Hartley, the killer. He must have been hiding somewhere upstairs. I must get away. But how? My car won't run. That other car, the coupe. I could jump into that, yes. Yes. Oh, if I can reach that coop before he comes down.
Anything wrong, sister?
Oh, too late.
Anything I can do for you, sister?
Yes. Yes, it's my car. It won't start. I thought someone here might help me.
Sorry. There doesn't seem to be anybody around. That's my coupe over there. I stopped for gas and no one came out, so I went in and looked around.
But did you find anybody?
There isn't a living soul in there.
Oh.
You look kind of tired.
No, I'm all right.
My name is Taylor. John Taylor.
I'm Linda Dixon.
Linda Dixon, huh? Glad to know you. You traveling far tonight?
I'm going to Mount Mansfield, to the lodge at Smuggler's Notch. They're expecting me.
Well, what do you know about that?
What?
Mount Mansfield is the place I'm heading for, too. Isn't that a coincidence?
I'm sure it is.
And your car won't run, huh? I'll tell you what. We'll put your baggage in my car, and I'll give you a lift to Mount Mansfield. You can send for your car in the morning.
No.
I'll have your bags switched in a jiff.
Please. No, I'd rather not.
There you are. All switched. Now, come on. Get in here.
Leaving behind us the dead man in the service station.
Well, from where we sit, it looks as if Linda Dixon's got herself into an awful jam. And believe me, she's shaking like jelly. Now, let's see how our star Agnes Moorhead in the role of Linda Dixon is making out. All alone in a car with a strange man. But after all, she shouldn't be too scared of him. He's just a felon who needs a friend.
I sat stiff and tense beside the man who called himself John Taylor. He had both hands on the wheel and he stared out through the windshield. My eyes focused on something on his right hand. It was a stain, a small stain, but it was wet and red. I couldn't take my eyes off it.
What are you looking at?
Oh, nothing at all.
I think I'll turn on the radio. Did you know there's been a jailbreak?
Hartley is 5'10", very dark hair. Don't be fooled by his pleasant manner. He is a killer by instinct.
A killer by instinct?
A killer by
instinct. I look
instinct
at the man beside
and
me.
Very dangerous. He is accompanied by Helen Hearn. Helen Hearn is a clever and dangerous woman. 5'3", red hair, very pretty.
I caught Taylor looking at me out of the corner of his eye. What are you looking at?
At your hair. It's red.
There was a streak of lightning, and looking out of the rain-swept window, I glimpsed a signpost. The lightning illuminated the sign, and my heart skipped a beat at what I saw. That sign we just passed.
What about it?
It said, Barrington ahead, we're going the wrong way. We should be on the Mansfield Road, not the Barrington Road.
That's funny. I must have taken the wrong turn.
Well, aren't you going to turn back?
Sure. Whatever you say. We'll turn right around and go back.
Hello? Oh.
We're in the ditch.
In the ditch. Oh.
No good. She won't budge. Well, looks like we're stuck here for the night.
I think I'd better get out and walk. Perhaps there's a house nearby.
Walk in this weather?
I don't mind the weather, really, I don't.
You can't walk in this storm. You're staying right here until I get the car out of the ditch. I've got some tools in the trunk compartment. You stay put.
I heard him open the trunk in the back. I listened for further sounds, but there was nothing. I didn't hear him moving back there. I didn't hear any tools. I had to find out what he was doing. Slowly, carefully, I got my door open. I stepped out into the rain and sneaked back toward the rear. I saw him there, not moving, in front of the open trunk compartment, bending over with a flashlight in his hand. The ray of light was focused on something curled up inside. It wasn't baggage or tools. It was a woman's body. Just then, he saw me. He snapped the flashlight off, but not before I caught a glimpse of red hair. Then, I must have fainted. When I came to, I found myself seated inside the car again. The storm was over. The night was quiet.
Oh, so you're awake again.
I don't feel well.
Is it because of what's in the trunk compartment?
Oh, she's dead.
I told you not to get out of the car.
What are you going to do with me?
What do you think?
They say that when a person loses all hope, he subconsciously seeks refuge in sleep. That's what must have happened to me. I must have dozed, or perhaps I fainted, I don't know. But I awoke with a start at the sound of brakes. I sat up straight and saw that we had stopped in front of a small fieldstone house. Why are we stopping here?
I'm out of gas.
Oh.
Come on. We're going in.
The sign on the door said Roger Bryce, M.D. A doctor's house. I began to feel a spark of hope. There might be a chance.
I'll do the talking. Is that clear?
Yes.
Where's the bell? Oh. He must be awake. There's a light in the parlor.
How do you do?
Oh, good evening. Dr. Bryce?
Yes. Can I help you?
I'm terribly sorry to disturb you, Doctor, but my sister and I were heading for Mansfield, and we seem to have gotten lost. And we're out of gas.
His sister? He was passing us off as brother and sister. Now I knew why he hadn't cut my throat as he had that service station man. He was carrying me for protection. I was his passport through the police cordon. His sister...
But I'm afraid I can't be of much help to you. I'm 7 miles from the nearest town, and I haven't any spare gasoline. But come in, won't you?
Well, yes, thank you. We will.
I wonder if I could offer you my hospitality for the night.
Oh, that would be imposing.
Not at all. I have 2 rooms that aren't being used.
Well, really...
Oh, come. Come, I insist.
I had hoped for a chance to talk to Dr. Bryce alone. Just a word to warn him. But Taylor never left us alone for a minute. He insisted on coming into my room to make sure, he said, that it was comfortable enough for me. Then he took the doctor by the arm and went out with him.
Good night, sis. And sweet dreams.
I was alone, free of the presence of John Taylor. I had another lease on life. I lay down on the bed, but I didn't dare close my eyes. I waited. My heart pounding to give them both a chance to retire. And I slipped off my shoes and got off the bed in my stocking feet. I stole across the room and inched my door open. Slowly, carefully, I stepped out into the corridor and turned right toward the doctor's room.
What's the matter, sister? Sleepwalking? You... weren't thinking of going anywhere, sister, were you?
I wanted a drink of water.
A drink of water, hmm?
Yes.
Hmm. In case you didn't know it, there's a water pitcher on your dresser.
Oh. Well, I didn't see it.
Good night, sister.
I turned around and went back into my room. It was no use. I lay down on the bed. How long I lay there, I don't know. Perhaps I slept, perhaps not, but I heard that slight creak as my door began to inch open. The blood chilled in my veins. Vaguely, I saw the outline of the hand and the knife it held. I wanted to scream, but I couldn't. Slowly, he came toward the bed. Now he stands over me. He raises the knife. I screamed and rolled over on the bed just as the knife flashed down. I rolled off the bed and cowered in a corner. That horrible figure came around the bed after me with a knife upraised. Help! Dr. Bright! Help me! Help! While I cowered there in the corner, they fought all over the room in the dark. I had no strength to move, to think, not even to hope. All the life seemed to have gone dead in my veins. Then it was over. But who had won? In the dark, I strained my eyes to see. Doctor? Dr. Bright? Is that you?
No, Linda. It isn't Dr. Bryce. It's I, John Taylor.
It was John Taylor standing there at the light switch. And on the floor lay Dr. Bryce, unconscious, with a long gash in his head.
I had to hit him with a water pitcher.
My eyes swung back to Dr. Bryce, and I saw the knife still gripped in his right hand.
That's Hartley, Linda.
What?
Lee Hartley, the killer.
It was he who came in here with the knife?
Right. I was down the cellar just now. The real Dr. Bryce is down there, dead.
Oh.
This guy posed as Bryce when we came to the house.
Oh, then you're not Hartley.
Oh, what a situation. All the time you thought I was Lee Hartley, and I thought you were Helen Hearn on account of your red hair.
Oh, but the body of that red-haired woman...
That's Helen Hearn.
Oh.
This guy must have killed her back at the service station and stuffed her body in my trunk compartment while I was inside.
That all happened last summer. In time, I think I'll manage to forget that night of terror. But it won't be soon. Sometimes in the night I dream that I see that awful figure with a knife poised above my throat. And I wake up screaming. But then John takes me in his arms and holds me tight and tells me that everything is all right. You see, I'm Mrs. John Taylor now.
What do you know? A happy ending. As for Mr. Hartley, that pleasant killer, he got what he deserved. Some people never know when they're well off. He should have stayed in jail, where they never raise your rent, where they make no charge for meals or for electric current. You see, when you're in jail, everything is free. Except you. Well, friends, it's time once again to close that creaking door. Until next week at the same time, when we'll be back with a little hunk of horror. You'll be sure to listen, won't you? Until next week, then. Good night. Pleasant dreams. Thank you.
We heard Inner Sanctum, Terror by Night. The original broadcast of the 29th of June, 1952. Starring Agnes Moorehead, because of featuring her for Women's History Month. Yeah, I don't know about that. What is that? Three dead bodies and it's not even 5:30 a.m. All right, we got to fulfill the FCC obligation here. So give me just 1 second.
Wake up and text. Text and eat.
Mm-mm.
Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council, and the highway, whatever that was. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm going to continue the show with another Inner Sanctum. Again, this is Inner Sanctum double feature, featuring the talents in the first half of Agnes Moorehead. The second Inner Sanctum I'm going to play is titled Hitchhiking Corpse. Had an original air date of the 23rd of January 1950. These two I'm featuring here in the latter years of Inner Sanctum, because Inner Sanctum ran on Blue Network from 1941 to 1952. Developed by Chaim Brown. But anyway, back to Hitchhiking Corpse. This one was written by Lucille Fletcher, a friend of the Grand Hour here, or Grand Hour friend. She, her and Agnes Moorehead did Sorry Wrong Number, but they both got heralded for the writing and the acting. But she also, Lucille Fletcher also wrote The Hitchhiker, that was adapted by Rod Serling on The Twilight Zone. I wonder if she had something to do with hitchhiking here, because this one's titled Hitchhiking Corpse. Again, with an original air date of the 23rd of January, 1950. Thanks for listening.
Good evening, friends of the creaking door. This is your host inviting you into the inner sanctum. Come in, come on in. Oh, come on, we love company. Simply can't do enough to them. We've got lots of games custom designed for our guests. They'll simply slay you. The favorite's called a Tisket, a Casket. But the game we play best is called Revival. Oh, it's wonderful. You pass out and we try to revive you. If we don't, you don't. Now for our eerie spell, the hitchhiking corpse. Climb up in the driver's seat. Sit close to the driver. Sean O'Hara, the bewitched man with the deep-set eyes. Hear what he has to tell about the beautiful corpse of Medoc County. The girl who lost her head over him.
Eileen, the last time I saw her, she was standing where she always waits for me. On the little white bridge where the road takes a bend around Moon Hollow. I could hear her call for me to stop.
Stop! Stop! Stop!
wasn't going to stop for her. Not anymore. My mind was made up to that. And then a lightning flash burned over her like a million lighted candles. And she was standing there where she always waited for me. Without her head. Eileen had lost her head. Am I right in my mind now, I'm wondering? These things I know, these things that I saw, was it a dream? A man's imagination gets tipsy when he drives a great silver van 400 miles in the loneliness of the night. Eileen. The first time I saw her, she was standing where she stood the last time on a little white bridge near Moon Hollow. Climb in, miss. There, yeah. Sit deep in your seat with your head low. It's a black mark in the book for me if the company inspectors see you riding in the cab. I'll be docked.
They won't see me. Only you can see me, son.
Only I can see. You're calling me by name.
No. I'm making up a name for you.
But it is my name, Sean. Sean O'Hara. It's an uncanny bit of making up you just did, Miss...
Try, Sean. If you try, you too can do an uncanny bit of making up.
With your hair like it is, and your face, just one name suits. Only one name.
And my name?
Eileen.
I am Eileen.
And just where are you riding to?
To Medoc County. But someday, not tonight.
Medoc County is a good 80-mile ride from Moon Hollow. Is it someday, I heard you say?
Yes, someday I'll be riding to Medoc County. And it will be you who will take me there.
Wow. There's little to that. I always pass through Medoc. It's on my route.
My people came from up there. It's a big house we once had. A great big house. Without windows.
Without windows, you say?
There was a great hall. And a great long table. With my people sitting round it. The living and the dead.
The living and the... A house without windows and now it's the living and the dead. You're a pretty one. But you're as batty as a loon.
Am I really a pretty one to you, Sean?
Sure. Pretty hair. Eyes to light up a man's dream. Dainty little hands. The two of them fit into one of mine. The face...
A face, Sean?
No. The face I cannot praise.
Why not?
With all the war paint on it, if I didn't bite my tongue, I might say that what I see smeared over your cheeks is blood.
Don't bite your tongue, Sean.
You're getting out. Trust Sean O'Hara to pick up a gibbering farm girl who smears her face with chicken blood. Good night to you.
Good night, Sean. I'll be waiting again tomorrow night at Moon Hollow. I'll be watching for you.
I watched her go, sailing off in the mist. As high as my eyes could go, I could see her riding into the sky like a night witch, and then blowing into the smoke of the moon. There had been no Eileen. I dreamed her up in my fat head. A man's imagination gets tipsy when he drives a great silver van in the loneliness of the night. I pulled into the yard behind old Morgan's diner to sleep the night from 2 to 6, curled up in my cab like I always did. I'm a hearty man and a steady sleeper, not given to dreaming. But this night, bad luck to me, I dreamed. She was leaning over me, Eileen, with the moon in her eyes. And now the blood was wet on her cheeks and running down in big red beads to splash my shirt.
The old mill house in Medoc, where the water falls, in Medoc.
The old mill house in Medoc, where the water falls.
The old mill house in Medoc, where the water falls. You must see that the dead go home,
Sean. See that the dead... Eileen. Eileen! There was No, Eileen. I've been dreaming. Dreaming, but the radio was playing loud enough to wake the dead. The dreaming man doesn't turn on the radio. Eileen!
You always wake up like a roaring lion of hell.
What?
It's me, Morgan.
I guess you've had all the music you need to wake you up. It was you who turned my radio on?
Me, it was. Were you thinking the radio turned itself on?
I had a dream about a girl.
A nightmare's more like what you had. From the looks of you, you were thrashing about in that seat and beating yourself on the face with your fists.
Beating myself? Why is that?
Well, the blood all over your shirt.
Blood?
Stop looking bewitched, O'Hara, and look in your truck mirror to your nose. You gave yourself a nosebleed in your sleep, and that, my boy, was no dream.
I was an hour late for unloading in the Cloverville Depot.
O'Hara.
Yeah, Red.
Come over to the van a minute, where the Lotus can't get an airful.
Oh, you're acting funny.
We've got everything off the inventory calls for. But there are three other items. I threw a canvas cover over them before the boys got a look at them. Did you look into your van?
What's under the canvas cover, Red?
Coffins, O'Hara. Three old pine wood coffins. Want to tell me something?
Tell you? Well, sure, I almost forgot about those coffins. It's a side job. Some yokel undertaker down by Moon Hollow. I'm to drop them off somewhere. Save him trucking charges that way and make myself $20 side money.
Quit lying to me, O'Hara. And to yourself.
Oh, lying, you say? But it's a fact, Red. Positively a fact. And I'm giving you half of the $20 for covering me. Wasn't one to pass up $20 for trucking three empty coffins.
The coffins aren't empty, O'Hara. And you never took a job from any local undertaker either.
You seem to know a lot about something.
I know Route 266. I was born and raised here.
What is there to know?
For one thing, the red-headed witch of Moon Hollow, maybe. You might be trucking the dead for her.
Eileen?
Or any name you give her. She was Katie to a trucker named Conway who had your run once. To hear Conway tell it, Katie, or Eileen, was always trying to get him to take her dead out of Moon Hollow to somewhere else.
Tomato cottage, to the old mill house.
Or somewhere. Anyhow, that's how the story usually goes. But what she's really out to do is drive you crazy.
How do you know there is such a girl?
Those pine boxes in there. I saw them on Conway's truck once, like they're on yours now. Conway dumped them right back in Moon Hollow. Take my advice. From now on, pass the redhead up. Jam your accelerator to the floorboard and go past her at 80.
I don't know what I'll do. What I did, bad luck to me on the trip back, was look for the waterfalls and the old mill house when I came to the Medoc County line. Was there an old mill house where the waterfalls, I was wondering? Or was I a man looking hard to lose his mind? I brought one of the caskets to the ground. It wasn't empty, but there wasn't much weight to it either. I opened it. It held the dead all right, but not the face or the body of the dead. It was only the skeleton. Skeleton of someone dead more years than the mind can imagine. And there was a waterfall in the deep woods. The music of water, Eileen's voice splashing in it.
The old mill house, under the water.
And there was an old mill house down below the rocks. A stone house without windows, like Eileen had said. I pulled an old rusted bolt and opened the door to one great room and a table that went from wall to wall. It was old. The flying dust could blind a man, so he'd only see what his tipsy imagination would want him to see. I saw Eileen. Eileen standing before me with her arms out. Like a thin shadow, my eyes could see through to the wall.
Go bring the casket, son. Go bring the dead home.
Here's something terribly new in thumbing a ride. A witch hiker. And a neat switch, too, on the old boy meets girl formula. This one's boy meets girl. Eileen, now there's a bonny lass, dead set on getting ahead. And if she keeps up the pace, she'll have O'Hara shorn of his sanity any mile now. But let's get back beside our bewitched trucker.
A man's imagination gets tipsy when he drives a great silver van in the loneliness of the night. But there was an old mill house where the water falls, as Eileen has said. And it was there I left three caskets of the old dead. Passing Moon Hollow on the way back, I stopped in at Morgan's diner for some warm and coffee. It was just old Morgan putting his profits into the screaming jukebox.
O'Hara, it's you.
Nobody else.
Well, I've been waiting all night for you to come.
I stopped for a time in Maydock. Well, agitated the way you look. Have I slipped out on you for a meal?
No.
I don't understand the looks of you.
The shoebox. It's for you, you see? Your name's written on it. Sean O'Hara.
And left by whom?
The devil's own daughter. O'Hara, her face was enough to send the man hiding in his cabin.
A face all smeared with blood, was it?
You have seen her, too.
We are old acquaintances by now. When I left Morgan's prying eyes, I opened the shoebox. It held a small white envelope and an old rusted tin can. I opened the envelope. Two tickets there were. To a costume party in the Moon Hollow Firehouse for the next night. And the tin can full of money. A showering of Indian pennies and buffalo nickels. Coins with a grit and tarnish of years on. Like some miser had saved them in a secret nook of the kitchen. That was too much for a tired working man to puzzle out. My poor head would have none of it. I had a load to haul back that night. It was time enough for puzzles another night. She'd be standing on the little white bridge where the road takes a bend. And then I would put my questions to her. She was standing there the next night watching for me. Calling for me to stop.
Sean! Stop, Sean!
Her hair was wild as before and her face the same. Her dress was changed. It was a costume now she was wearing. All silk and gaiety, like she was dressed up for a party.
No!
Yes, Eileen.
You weren't going to stop.
For a fact, no. You'll not be riding in my cab. And I'll not be trucking your dead ancestors anymore. Not for a barrel of nickels and pennies. Here, take your money back.
No. It was grandmother's savings. She wants you to have it.
Oh, so there's a grandmother too, is there?
Yes.
And when will she be riding along to the old mill house?
Tonight, Sean. She will ride with you tonight. And after that, I'll be riding with you to Maydock, too.
And that settles the count of your people?
No. It still leaves you, Sean.
Me? Am I hearing you say me?
Yes, you two will sit at the long table in the great hall of the dead. You will sit beside me.
Alive, is it to be, or dead?
Dead, Sean. Like us.
And what will snuff me out, a hardy man like me without a sickness?
You will just die. Your heart will just stop.
My heart will stop.
You don't want to sit beside me?
It's not by way of wooing a lady.
Sean?
Yes, Eileen.
Do you like my costume?
I do. And what's it for?
The dance at the firehouse. I thought you would take me.
I think not.
Then I will go alone. Good night, Sean.
Compliments of the evening to you, miss. instead of sleeping in old Morgan's yard, there I was just before the midnight hour, in the costume of a trucker with a tottering mind, and looking for Eileen in the firehouse. I found her in her silk and gaiety where the Japanese lanterns were dimmest, wearing a mask like the others were, but not dancing like the others. Eileen?
Sean.
You're not surprised I came?
I knew you'd come.
You're not dancing?
The music is stopped?
It's unmasking time. Midnight's not a minute away. The caller's announced.
Attention! Attention, everybody! It's midnight! Everybody, unmask!
You're not unmasking, Eileen.
You unmask me, Sean O'Hara.
All right, I'll... Speak again. Say my name again.
Sean O'Hara.
The voice. It's not the voice of Eileen.
I am not Eileen. Put your hand to my mask, Sean.
Yeah. You're an old lady.
I am old. And the life you see is the last I have to show. Look at me for the last time, O'Hara. I am Eileen's grandmother.
But Eileen, she was here. Her hand was in mine. Dressed in the costume with the silken gaiety you're now wearing.
Eileen slipped away to leave me with you. You have business with me now, Sean.
Business, you say?
Take me to Medoc County. The old mill house where the water falls. I'll be waiting to ride with you, O'Hara. Don't be long.
I drove the lonely night to the Maida County line with my freight of storage eggs and canned goods. I met dead in a pine box. The old grandmother in her silks was in her casket. I didn't bother to ask whose job it was. I put the questions to Eileen the next time she waited for me where the road takes a bend around Moon Hollow. And she was there like I know she'd be, pointing her thumb to hitch a ride.
Stop for me! Stop!
But I didn't stop this last time. I did what the checker red lacy said Conway failed to do, and what I must do. I passed her up. I pushed the gas accelerator to the floor and passed her by in 80. Her shriek where the highway bends into Moon Hollow. But I didn't leave Eileen behind. She was on the seat beside me.
You didn't want to stop, Sean.
She was beside me. Without her head.
I'm dead, Sean. Dead. Now drive me to Medoc County.
The imagination gets tipsy. The sheriff of Medoc County is one to know it. And the doctor beside him looking at me with eyes of pity is one to know it, too. I hear them talking to me. But the words go sailing into the smoke of the moon. I listen, but I do not understand.
You ran over on the bridge down in Moon Hollow last night. A 20-ton truck, O'Hara. Her head was severed. I'll tell you all you need to know about Eileen Grant, her grandmother, and her people. They were run out of the old mill out of Medoc County about 30 years ago. Native superstition did that. The family was thought to have, well, call it evil powers. Where'd you take Eileen to, O'Hara?
Huh?
Eileen, what did she do with the body?
I'll take you to her. Come, I'll take you to her. I took them, the sheriff and the doctor, to the old mill house where the water falls. Here's Sheriff is Eileen and her people sitting around the table in the great hall of the dead.
O'Hara, to do this, to set them around the table like that. You couldn't be in your right mind, man.
No, I couldn't be. And I'm no one to admit that. I'm not in my right mind to sit here beside Eileen now. What can there ever be between a man and a girl? Sitting and rotten in an old mill with their ancestors looking on. O'Hara. O'Hara.
Say, Doc, take a look at him.
O'Hara's dead.
Dead? To sit down and die just like that?
Just like that, Sheriff. O'Hara's heart just stopped. As if he willed it to stop.
Now that O'Hara's given up the ghost, there's a job open. Somebody. As a special inducement to insanity, a pretty girl goes along with every truck. Oh, sorry, friend. I can't tell you which of the two jobs is the more harrowing. Moral? Oh, sure. I've got one carved right here on my vertebrae. This is for any motorist who runs across Eileen. Give her the go-by, Bob. All she'll get you is dead mileage. Pleasant dreams.
That we heard. We heard Tear by Hitchhiking Corpse. An original air date of the 23rd of January, 1950. My apologies, that was not written by Lucille Fletcher, but that was adapted from her second famous radio play, The Hitchhiker. I should have just played The Hitchhiker. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM. And or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Be back next week. I don't think we'll have four dead people before 6 a.m. next week, but who knows. Center Sanctums are pretty interesting. When they aired from 1941 to 1952 on the Blue Network. But again, like I said, you're listening to WMFO Medford. Thanks.
Love the 80s, but tired of the usual hits? Satisfy your 80s fix with DJ Savoir Faire on Songs from the Squid Pod, Friday nights at 10 p.m.
This is a great social opportunity for us. Come on!
I think I'm nearly about you.
Meet me in Downbeats. Titillate your 80s chakra, and exhale through your inner garage.
Got a radio
Songs from the Squid Pod, with
My name is
Friday nights at 10 p.m.
It's a date, it's a scam, whatever, all right.
Only on 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford.
took a vow in summertime. Now we find ourselves in late December. I believe that New Year's Eve will be the perfect time for their great surrender. But they don't remember. Anger wants a voice, voices won't sing. Sinners harmonize till they can't hear anything. Thought that I was free from all that questioning. But every time a problem ends, another one begins. And the stone walls of harmony all bear witness. Anybody with a word in mind can never forgive the sight of wicked snakes inside a place you thought was dignified. Like a young pretender. Beneath these velvet gloves I hide shameful crooked ends of a moneylender. Cause I still remember. Anger wants a voice, voices wanna sing. Sinners harmonize till they can't hear anything. Thought that I was free from all that questioning. But every time a problem ends, another one begins. And the stone walls of harmony all bear witness. Anybody with a word in mind can never forgive the sight of wicked snakes inside a place you thought was dignified. Snakes inside a place you thought was dignified. I don't wanna live like this.